Welcome to Cold Email with Basha and Olive. Episode 12, Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss.
Can you do it in like a Monster Trucks voice?
Yeah. Gaslight, Gatekeep, and Girl Boss. Showdown 2021. Da, 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 da.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Yes.
Get it? Because we do it on Sundays.
Yes. Yeah. Sunday, yeah. Sunday, Sunday. Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss. Be there for the SmackDown.
Which one will win?
It's like rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, it's all losing.
Yeah, they're all.
This week, our episode theme, as you might have guessed, is Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss. Do you want to explain what that is? Well, where did Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss come from? Is it just like, because I don't really know. It's just something people say, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a meme, and it kind of like, it makes a joke out of gaslighters, gatekeepers, and girl bosses, and a lot of times people will be like, say it about like a person or like a character or like an actor in a show.
So I see from the first page of Google results that Gaslight, Gatekeep, and Girl Boss is meant to be a parody of Live, Laugh, Love.
It's like the villain version.
Yeah, it's supposed to, it seems like, poke fun at like, I don't know, the things that people do, kind of normalize talking about it, but also kind of make fun of the, I'm gonna say chuggy, sorry, chuggy, like, culture. So now I'm actually gonna look up a good definition of chuggy, because I know I'm gonna have to explain that. Okay, chuggy, read the New York Times article if you want, but it's kind of, like, basic, like, stuff, kind of, but it's, like, a little different.
Yeah, it's, like, the quote, like, basic, like, it's, like, millennial basic.
Yeah, that's totally it. It's millennial basic, it's, like, chevron.
Yes, patterns. That's exactly what I was thinking. Chevron, like the teal and white, you know, what's it like, melted crayon paintings in your house, like that script, you know, the script.
Oh yeah, especially I look up like sign painter stuff or like writing in like classic script tutorials, and there's due to that trend, it's like a little hard to find like real materials, because there's a difference between like a classic like painter's script, a sign painter's script, or like the proper way to write script, and that.
Yeah,
but that's my beef with that. So where were we?
Chuggy, Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss.
Okay, yeah, so we're gonna be talking about the gaslighters, gatekeepers, and girl bosses of the quote-unquote industry. But we're not going to be like, this person is a gas, like this person.
No, this is not an expose.
No exposes here. Well, I mean, I guess
if we do talk shit, we're going to edit it out. So there's that.
This isn't that kind of podcast.
No, as much as my sisters would like it to be. It's not.
Okay, so I think we'll just go category by category, right? And kind of talk about each.
Yeah.
Because there's three distinct categories.
Yeah.
Gaslighters, gatekeepers,
and girl bosses.
And girl bosses.
Yeah.
And then later, we're going to talk to Siobhan Gallagher about all that and much more. So stay
as
tuned.
As usual.
I know. I feel like we've never said, like, this person's coming on until much later.
Yeah.
It's like, it's funny. Anyways, okay, gaslight.
Gaslight. Gaslighting is when somebody tells you that what you know is true is a lie to try to make you feel crazy, right? Is that, that's pretty much it?
I think so. And then usually sometimes they're doing something.
Yeah, they're saying that they didn't do something also. They're like, I never did that. Or like, that never happened, though they know it happened and they're trying to make you feel crazy. Yeah, so it's like twisting information to make you feel crazy.
Yeah, I would say an example of this for me is that I had a job right before the pandemic started, where I got yelled at probably once a day, like really screamed at by a guy, my boss, for things that were completely not my fault. But, you know, he would put everything on me. Like, he wasn't a good boss or business owner at all. And like I was like easy to blame, you know. I was 23, I was like the only not like cis dude working there, so yeah, I got blamed and yelled at like every day. There was one time where I didn't have my work email on my phone. Keep in mind, this was also a minimum wage job. I missed an email over the weekend, or rather, I didn't see an email over the weekend, because also, no, like, it wasn't urgent, and I got screamed at on Monday. But basically, the gaslighting thing there is that I thought, until, I'm still, like, working through all these feelings, but at the time, I thought I sucked at everything, and I thought I would never be good or successful because of, like, what this person was telling me and how they were manipulating my feelings to make me feel like an idiot, like an inept idiot, when meanwhile I was much more able than anyone working there. So I think that's like literally the definition of gaslighting.
Yeah,
but I think there's like other ways that it kind of happens subtly. And again, there's like gender dynamics in all of this, in all of these terms that are like inherent or underlying. I don't know, sometimes they really follow gender roles. Like, yeah. I feel like a lot of gaslighting, like, speaking in broad terms, is, like, man to woman. Like, a man gaslight, like, that's like, the most common example, maybe, that you hear about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, I mean, there's, like, other ways that it happens on a small scale, right?
Oh, yeah, like, I can't think of any large-scale one that I've experienced right now, but, like, on small scale, like, I find most often is when I'm, like, talking to a client over email, always the men, also, to bring in that point, and I'm, like, asking them about stuff and, you know, like, about the project, like, the details, and recently I had somebody message me and or email me, and they were like, hey, like, can we use this logo on like a flyer? And I was like, sure, yeah. Can we talk about price for it though, also, and rights? Like, what kind of flyer and what are you going to use it for? And he goes, yeah, like, we're hoping to use it, like, for their logo, for, like, everything, and for this, like, flyer.
Holy shit.
And I was like, okay, well, like, to buy out the copyright's gonna be a lot of money. Like, that's, like, a whole-ass logo that they want to use for everything. Like, I sent him the price for that, and he's like, Olive, we are doing a small 14-run, or, like, 14-day show, like, we cannot, like, afford, like, this is way out of our budget. Like, what's the budget for just using it on the poster? And I was like, you could have told me from the beginning that it was going to be a small show, and that they were, like, the opener of the openers, and the logo was going to be real tiny, yeah. And then afterwards, come to find out, that 14-day tour was, like, a big touring music festival. And though it was only 14 days, it was, like, a countrywide big thing with, like, big names on the bill. So it's like, okay, like, you just manipulated me into feeling crazy about trying to charge you for
that. Did you give it away? Did you say they could just use it for free at the end?
Yeah, I was like, you could just take it, yeah.
Because
I didn't know. I was like, oh, a 14-day tour. I'm like, I feel stupid. I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, it's at the bottom of the bill. Why didn't you just say so? Like, but then I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you didn't mention that. Like, and not that I would have charged anything exorbitant for it, but, you know, the $50-$100, like, would have helped, you know? Yeah. Oh, here's another one. I was working on a music video this one time, of course, and, I'm working with the manager, and I'm like, okay, like, what do they want for this video? And he's like, oh, like, they don't know, like, just do, like, whatever. And so I come up with, like, a whole deck of, like, three different, like, prompts with, like, little, like, sketches of concept art and, like, different, like, storylines. And after, like, a week and a half of, like, doing that and sending that to him, he's like, oh, no, the band wants it to be, like, literally, like, the storyline of the song. And I was like, Are you kidding me? Like, I asked you if the band had any direction, and you told me to come up with concepts, and then I come up with concepts a week and a half later, and you say, like, no, this is not what we want at all. This is actually what the band wants. It's like, you could have just answered my question, you know? Yeah, I'm like, oh my god, you make me feel insane! Because they won't answer questions! And, like, dealing with those things, like, I've learned a bit of how to deal with that, and I find the best way is to ask a million questions, like, from the get-go, and if they don't answer it in the first email, ask it again. Like, always ask a million questions, because they will avoid or forget or try to,
Yeah, you have to overcompensate for someone's ineptitude often.
Yeah.
For me, dealing with my gaslighting situation, I fucking quit. I quit. Like, I really, really quit.
Yeah, that was, like, a really, it was a bad situation.
It was really bad. I was, like, so, I quit, and it hurt a lot at the time, but it's totally okay now. I mean, I think unlearning, like, you know, having confidence in yourself and faith in yourself, like, is hard anyway. And, like, when you're in a bad, like, gaslighty situation like that, where someone's, like, literally, like, piling emotional abuse onto you every day at work, people listening to this have had bad managers and bosses. Like, you know how it is. It really affects you. Not saying you can't get past it, but, like, when those thoughts are already there, because, like, you know, it's easy to doubt yourself, it kind of amplifies them in a big way. So I would just say I quit. That was cool. I kind of fucked them over. And yeah, I guess you can, like, call it out. I chose not to because I didn't want to cause a stir, but at any opportunity I can, I tell people not to work with them. So that's my little revenge. And my revenge is also knowing that they suck and, like, they're disorganized and horrible. And I saw them put my job up a couple days later. That kind of felt bad and weird because it was, I don't know, it was, like, hurtful. It's always hurtful to see that, especially when you leave on weird terms. But I was like, you know what? I don't envy anyone taking that job. I'm glad to not be in that job. So how to deal with it? Okay, I quit. That was cool. And every time I do something good, I'm like, haha, you... I'm trying not to, like...
Haha, you idiot.
So, right now I live at home. This is, like, an aside. And I just, like, we say some... We have some real colorful, like... My parents are from, like, deep Brooklyn and deep Queens. So I'm just trying not to say... Like, I was gonna start saying some... crazy, like, I was gonna start cursing them out right here or saying a curse word, but I was like, don't start saying, like, the weird stuff my parents did that I've gotten used to saying, that you would hear outside, like, a window. Someone would be yelling to someone on the street in Bensonhurst, like, I'm not gonna do that. But yeah, every time I do something good, I'm like, I just have a second where I think, haha, you fucking idiot. See, that's fine. You fucking idiot. I did it. You were so wrong. I'm so successful. You're such an idiot. You fucking moron. That was a taste. That was a taste.
The small revenge moments are the best. Because it's like, it's not anything that hurt. It's like something that benefits you, you know, and it makes you feel, yeah.
It's like positive revenge.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I do hope I could get to a place of, like, that was then, this is now. But it's just, I don't know, you love to see the haters lose when you win. Scarcity in design, like, I don't know where this is going. I don't mean to be, like, me versus you, but when you mess with me, I am, like, me versus you. And when I do something good,
yeah. It's enemies. Not enemy enemies, but, you know, in your mind enemies.
Like, with the chain stitch machine.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways, I think... The other way to maybe the less, like, mean way, because it is also, I don't want to just be like, it's me versus you all the time. And every time I fail, you win. And every time you fail, I win. And every time I win, you fail. You know, I don't, like, it's...
Yeah, it's not a villain-hero dynamic all the time.
But the real way, like, the harder way slash more long-term way is to find people who are on your team who are not evil jerks.
Yes.
And they're kind of hard to find, but once you got them, I mean, me and Olive, like, we've stuck through a lot.
Yeah. When your homies, your boys are there for you all the time, yeah.
Am I best friends with everyone I was friends with at college? No. Do I have active beef with some of them? Maybe. I'm not going to say it here, but I'll let you be the judge based on how I'm saying this. But, like, you know, after a while I felt bad, like, oh, I'm not, like, best friends with, like, people who I left college with. But I'm like, you know what? I made, like, a couple, like, real deal, true blue, lifelong friends.
Yeah, when you find your homies, like, when you find your boys, it's like, they're your boys, and it's like, it doesn't need to be a lot of people. Like, just have, like, a couple that stick by you.
Yeah, and then the fucking idiots become, like, a little easier to deal with.
Absolutely, especially when your boys are like, yeah, those guys are fucking idiots, yeah, we have your back.
Okay, before it starts sounding like I live in Bay Ridge, let's go to Gatekeep, maybe. Let's get off this one.
Yes. I feel like we talk about gatekeeping so often. It's, like, self-explanatory.
I think that, like, gatekeeping is why we made this podcast. Like, that was... I think I'm getting ahead of myself, but that's our way around gatekeeping.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we, you know... It's self-explanatory. Like, gatekeepers, they keep people out of the industry, but it's like, yeah, if you want to skip directly to how we deal, it's this. Yeah.
Think of someone literally at a gate letting people in or not based on their judgment.
Usually it's, like, higher-ups, like, people who've been in the industry for a while who are at that gate telling newcomers which ones can come in and which ones cannot.
Right, and there's a lot of that in every industry, but this industry especially. And a lot of people do have a scarcity mentality. Like, there's a limited amount of success, and if you get some before me or you take some, I'm gonna have less. Like, I don't think that's true at all. I think the more work other people get, like, I mean, more people are gonna want that kind of work. Like, it's good for you when your friends get work. You can feel a little jealous sometimes, but...
Yeah, when everybody gets work, then everybody's getting more work.
Yeah, and it's okay to feel a little jealous, but in the end, just be like, that's so great for you. At the end of the day, just,
remember that your own success is your own success, and there is... Scarcity mentality is fabricated. There's plenty of work to go around.
And friendship rules. Yours. Friendship is the most important. Work doesn't mean fucking anything.
Yes.
Getting jobs. Your work is what's important, as Alex Citrin once said. Your work is sacred. The jobs are whatever.
Yes. It's about the work and the friendships you make along the way.
Yeah, big time. I think in art school, this whole, like, gatekeeping thing is exacerbated. And, like, you definitely have a couple people who are professors. This is probably in any school that, like, you know, get off on, like, gatekeep it. Like,
yeah, they're like, oh, you guys are not gonna make it. Who's gonna make it?
Yeah, or like, oh, I'm choosing who I want to put in an internship, and I like feeling power over people. Yeah.
You ever watch Legally Blonde, the musical?
I actually saw it on Broadway.
Oh my god, that's random. So sick.
Thank you.
God,
I
didn't know that.
I went with a day camp out here.
Oh my god, that's so fun.
It was. I didn't want to go at all, but it was good. I'm not gonna lie.
It's
kind of crazy
show.
That we went to that. Yeah, anyways.
Yeah, it's a wacky show for a day camp. Yes. Do you know the professor in that show?
Oh yeah, what's his name? Oh,
Professor Callahan.
I had a teacher, Mr. Callahan, math. Nice guy. Anyways, sorry.
Nice. He's, like, the villain, like, gatekeeper professor. And, like, I feel like if you haven't experienced that before, it's, like, people, like, professors at Pratt could be, like, Professor Callahan. Where he's, like, Oh my god, his song. I was listening to his villain song the other day, and he's like, I run a billion-dollar law firm, and I hire 4 new interns every year. And only some of you will become professional lawyers. Only some. And
yo, that's exactly it.
It kind of feels that way. It's like, yeah, it's exactly it. And he's like telling them how they have to become like a lawyer is a shark. And like only like some of them will become sharks by becoming like morally unscrupulous. So he's singing this whole song telling them that they have to fight each other and become morally unscrupulous to get one of his 4 internship positions. And that's how it feels sometimes. I'm like, whoa, like they're kind of like Professor Callahan, where they're like, fight each other, there's scarcity of jobs.
Yeah, I definitely felt
you have to be better and I'll give you this internship.
I definitely felt that at college.
Yeah.
And people did some weird shit, I think. Not everyone, but
yeah.
I do remember having some rather unpleasant moments with some people that are just, a lot of people were just trying to cut you down. You know, scarcity.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, find the real ones, even if it's just a...
Yes.
Especially when you're in, like, a hyper-competitive situation, I think it's important to find the real ones, even if it's just 1 or 2 people.
Yeah. Yeah. The real ones will get it. The real ones will know that it's not a competition.
I think, yeah, yeah.
And that bros support bros.
Here are, like, a few other instances of, like, gatekeeping feeling really real. Sending a million emails to, like, art directors or studios whatever, and no one responds.
Cold emails, baby.
So true.
Cold emails.
Going to the American Illustration Party as someone who's under, like, 27.
The age-old example of gatekeeping.
Yeah.
It's literally, like, a gate there, too, because it's in, like, an old church. Let's head on to the final boss. Girl bosses.
Oh, I was gonna say, wait, we should talk about quickly how we got around it.
Yes.
Yeah, this we got around it with this podcast. And we wanted to be the opposite and make, I think a big part of my practice is like about accessibility and making information accessible. Yeah. I mean, we're giving this shit away for free. We're doing the legwork so you can hear from distinguished art directors, illustrators, designers, whatever.
And us.
And, like, granted, part of it is fun for us and we get a little clout. Unexpected consequence, but I'm not gonna be anti. And we have no clout, but it's fine.
No. I say "and us" as a joke because we're 2 years out of college and we're just talking.
So we got around gatekeeping by making this podcast, but also, like, with power and clout that we don't really have, but maybe we will one day, who knows?
Someday.
Like, eventually, we become gatekeeper. Like, when you get more popular or powerful or whatever, you do become a gatekeeper, and even if you don't want to believe that, like, it's true.
It's just, like, it's a position that comes with interacting with people who are new to the industry, and you're in a position where you are the one with more experience, and you're the one with the power to help them or not help them. And it's all what you do with that.
Yeah. I think by continuing to distribute this information for free in an accessible way...
Free, baby!
Yeah, I think by keeping doing that, we'll kind of make ourselves less gatekeepy, and then just, like, be nice to people if they ask you for, like, reasonable things, you know?
Send a recommendation for a friend, you know? Like, yeah. Follow somebody back on Instagram. Yeah, answer that email.
Yeah. Answer an email, really. Like, if you're an art director listening to this, I would say answer an email. Like, even if they're dumb. Just say thanks. Like,
yeah,
it hurts to not hear.
It doesn't need to be a whole sentence. Just half. Just a couple words, man.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to girl boss.
Yes, the final boss. Girl boss. I feel like my definition would be like, well, it's either like making fun of like a woman in power, or it's like making fun of women who abuse their power. It's like girl boss, teehee, but like for like a person who's like in like a woman who's in power and is like, I'm a woman, I'm doing so much, but they're actually like awful.
Yeah, here's the, I thought that was pretty good. Here's Urban Dictionary just to, for reference. A person who co-opts popular feminist girl power rhetoric as a way to virtual si- oh god, I don't want to read like a whole neoliberal thing. Basically, it's like making fun of girls, like, I guess, let's just say non-men who are in power, and some of them do like abuse their power and like are operating under like false pretenses of being like feminist and powerful, but sometimes like they're just bad bosses who are abusing their workers. I think that's kind of like the what people mean to say, but you know, it comes off as like really misogynistic, I think.
Yeah. I think it also depends on who it's coming from, too, because it's like, you know, you and I can say girl boss, hee-hee, but it's like, you know, we know that we're talking about those people who are, like, abuse their power, whereas, like...
It's more like, yeah, like, abuse of labor is what is really at the root of it.
Yeah. Whereas, like, if a man says it, yeah, people are, like, use it to just, you know, take down, like, people for no reason. Yeah, it's like, you're just, yeah, it's like how, like... guys say bitch to take down women, but like non-men can say
it's like women be like,
yes, yeah,
yeah. Do you know, like on Twitter people are like, or just ever, they're like, it's cool to say women be like and then say something horrible, yeah, like because it's funny or
yeah, I don't know. A long history of like rhetoric to make fun of, yeah, women and non-men, yeah. So in, like, summation, like, gaslighting is, like, we found is, like, a more of, like, a personal, like, an interpersonal, like, aggression thing. And, like, gatekeeping is, like, a ubiquitous, like, overarching systems thing. And I think Girl Boss is a little bit of both systems of,
right,
taking down women in power. And also, if they're your awful superior, they're... getting you personally.
Right, right. And I think it bears repeating that, like, all of these... I know we mentioned, like, can fluctuate or change or become more or less intense based on, like, your gender identity. But also, like, I would be remiss if I didn't say it is totally affected by, like, your racial identity as well.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it is exacerbated by, like, gender, race... age, like depending on who you are, like, yeah.
But there's ways of dealing with all three, even though none should happen to you as,
yeah,
a worker. You know, you're entitled, yes, to not have any of them happen to you, but sometimes they do. So push back on gaslighting, ask a lot of questions, gatekeeping, I don't know, like,
help a boy out, help, yeah, help a brother out. Help a brother out and keep sending emails to art, yeah, directors. If you keep talking to them, they'll have to. If you keep pounding on the gates, you know, like that Eric Andre gate meme that's like, let me in. If you keep doing that, they'll let you in.
Yeah, eventually they'll have to let you in. Be undeniable, Greg Kletzel, always. And also, if you're in a position of power, let them in. Just a little. Let them in.
Yeah, let them in. Let them in. And if you're in a position of power, be nice.
And for girl bossing?
Girl bosses.
I don't know. Don't, like, abuse labor. That's shitty.
Yeah, that's really awful. Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Don't abuse labors. All right, so now we are going to head into the interview portion of this podcast. Today, we're going to be talking to Siobhan Gallagher about, you guessed it, gaslighting, gatekeeping, and girl bossing. And a lot of other stuff. plenty more.
More and more. Yeah. Okay. You want me to... I'll do the bio. Oh, wait. But first, ads. Yeah.
Yes, but first, ads.
This week's sponsor of the week is World Famous Original. It's like a West Coast-based store that carries, like... I'm going to say, like, small art products that are cool,
yeah,
and accessories.
They got patches and candles and stickers.
They have
and
candles?
T-shirts. Yeah, I scrolled down, wow, a little bit and they have candles. I'm like, wow, sandalwood rose? Don't mind if I do, except I just bought two candles, so I probably don't need to do that right now.
Yeah.
Save for later.
Yeah. Actually, Ben's chain stitching inspired me to chain stitch. I think somehow.
Aww.
Yeah. I don't know, like, how I came across it, but maybe his video was the first that I ever saw about chain stitching. And there's, like, a whole chain stitch section of the website. There's custom
imprints. There's cool pins.
There's iron-on letters, patches, stickers.
Oh, very cool.
Candles, really funny bumper stickers. And they do live chain stitching. And their new store in Portland, in Oregon, not Maine, is opening soon. So if you're in that area, I definitely recommend it. Oh, also their typeface Grandmaster Clash is what we use for our logo.
Indeed, it's really it great. Is. Got so, their blessing to use it, too.
Yeah. So head on Shouts. Down to worldfamousoriginal.com for some really fun stuff.
That was really
Sounds good.
Good.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks. We're back from ads.
Yes. Thank you for listening to those ads. Remember that you can sponsor us for the low, low price of $5. We'll say anything you want within reason.
Yeah, me and Olive make a cool $2.50 each
no weird shit.
On these episodes. So
yes.
Yeah. Help us buy some small teas. That's about what $2.50 gets you at the coffee shop these days.
Yeah, something from the dollar store.
Part 2. The interview with Siobhan Gallagher.
Siobhan Gallagher is a Canadian visual storyteller illustrating the nuances of life through humor and sly observations. She's the author of In a Day's Work and Who Do You Think You Are, as well as a humor contributor to The New Yorker. Her art has been featured in Us Weekly, Elle Canada, Canadian Broadcasting Company, Penguin Classics, The New York Times, Pabst Blue Ribbon, and Abrams Books. In 2017, she received the Society of Illustrators Silver Medal of Excellence. You can find Siobhan's work at siobhan-gallagher.com. That's SIOBHAN-GALLAGHER.com. On Instagram at SIOGallagher and at the same handle on Patreon and Twitter.
But yeah, nice to meet you. Thanks Yay. To Porky yeah, thanks so for much joining for us.
Yes.
Let's call sweet dog.
I'd be offended if he just openly starts yawning.
Yeah, that's okay. All right. So, sorry, I'm going to keep us back on track, okay, though I yeah, do sorry, love this.
I will derail us occasionally.
Hello, Siobhan. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Welcome to cold email. So as we mentioned in the email, the title of this episode is Gaslight, Geekkeep, Girl Boss, you know, inspired by internet.
Yeah.
But it's like also so relevant to like art and design because it's fraught with gaslighters, gatekeepers, and girl bosses.
Yeah.
And so in the, like the A portion of this, Bash and I talked about like some of our experiences with that, with all three of those things and like, how we like, you know, avoid them in the future and like, you know, bring about like change and how to, what's the words I'm looking for? Like help out our peers to be able yeah. to create like a better place without gaslighters or gatekeepers
yes.
in the art design industry. So without further ado, our first question is, how have you experienced gaslighting and gatekeeping in the industry? And of course, no pressure, like, if you don't need to name names if you don't want
right.
to.
No. Reveal as much as you want.
Yeah.
Or as little.
Gaslighting and gatekeeping. I worked in, like, right now I'm a freelance artist. Like, I work from home. I mean, I guess kind of like the rest of the world still is. But when I was first sort of breaking out in the industry, I was working in publishing. But so I was in publishing, which is a very woman populated industry, which was kind of comforting, but also kind of like that just means there was a whole other like I don't know layer of all the bad things. Like it wasn't as explicit as like I don't know male dominated industries, but it was still like so most of my peers and coworkers and bosses were women, but a lot of the higher up roles were men. And I guess, like, so when you first emailed me about this, like, theme for the podcast, the main thing that came to mind was just the fact that, like, you, I don't know, as a woman in the industry, you, or I guess not everybody, but I definitely felt like, even though I was trying to, like, do my best, a lot of the kind of, like, dudes still saw, I don't know, saw me in a very specific way. Like, they kind of assigned who I was, like, mentally to themselves rather than, like, listening to who I was. And I guess to explain that, I mean, like, one of my boss's bosses was, I'm not gonna, like, get too specific, but he, like, took an interest in me. And I thought, like, oh, yay, like, time to kind of, like, find a mentor in the publishing industry. Like, I'm excited that someone is sort of seeing my work and taking an interest in it and wanting to help me, like, flourish. And so while I was looking forward to, like, I don't know, having, like, a friend slash mentor, he was not thinking of me in that way. He, like, took me out to lunch one day and was just like, you are so cute, and if I wasn't, like, twice your age, I would so want to date you. And I, yeah, and just, like, damn, dude, like, that, I don't know, it just sucks because I didn't get into a job or a field to, like, I don't know, be flirted with. I wanted to make professional connections. And if I was a dude, he would have maybe taken me under his wing as, like, a mentor-mentee relationship. But because I'm a woman, and because, honestly, like, that wasn't the first time that all of my coworkers, like, heard about him doing that. So because I was, like, a woman in my 20s and had red hair, it was like, that's why he took an interest in me. So it's, I don't know, it's just frustrating that no matter how talented or how, excuse me, how hardworking you are, some people will just kind of look at you as, I don't know, a potential fling or whatever, just because that's what they want to get out of you. So I don't, and yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily gaslighting or gatekeeping, but I guess it's like not, I don't know, it was not a great way for me to feel like I can flourish in that, like, in that workplace, because I wanted to make book covers and, like, get, I don't know, collaborate with authors and with, like, editors and stuff. And instead I was having to deal with, like, I don't know, put from, like, professional mode, having to go into, like, oh, like a creepy dude at a bar mode. Like, now my defenses are up and now I don't feel safe. And now I don't feel, I don't know, protected, like, by my boss. And I know, like, I mean, over the years you've heard of so many stories of that exact same thing happening, like, with, like, young musicians who have a producer, who have, like, who find mentorship in a more established musician, and them get, like, kind of getting thrown under the bus when they, like, turn down someone's interest. So that was, yeah, I know, that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think of, like, as a woman, as a female artist, like, in, like, living and working in New York. That was a major bummer. And it was, I don't know, I was really taken aback, and I was kind of, like, my initial response was, oh, like, I don't know, the exact same kind of thing that I would feel when I would be on, like, a bad date, where it's, like, this is an awkward moment and I don't want to make this man mad. So I'm just going to, like, smile my way through it just to, like, get out of the situation and then kind of, like, collect my thoughts and, like, register what happened. So I was just like, ha ha ha, oh, ha ha ha. Like, let's finish our meal and pay, like, let's go back to work. And I think that that's, I don't know, that is like a sad reality for women, that, like, that is how we have been taught to react to those things, like, how you don't make it more awkward, don't make the person angry, because you don't know how they'll retaliate. So just like be the nice girl and smile, and then hopefully like ignore it later or whatever. And then so the next day, I went into his office and I was like, you can't do that. Like, just FYI, like that was shitty, and I work here, and I don't want to feel like my talents are, I don't know, being like applauded for the wrong reasons. Like, I want you to think I'm a good designer and not a cute girl that you can do that to. Oh yeah. So that was years ago. And then eventually he was, that was before, I don't know if either of you remember that, like what year it would have been, like maybe 2017 or 2016, the shitty men of media list that was released online. I don't remember what year it was, but there was like a list that was a Google Doc or something that was circulating, that like I think one person created and then other people added to. And that, so that dude's name was on the list. And I was like, ah, it all adds up. And like those, I don't know how many of those men are still working, but it was like, not a comfort, but it was kind of, I don't know. It was a little bit comforting to be like, oh, okay, other people realize that he does that. And now he's no longer working in the industry. So happy ending, kind of, in that situation. Yeah.
Yeah, first of all, I'm so sorry that happened.
Yeah.
It was like, when it was happening, I was like, this is not Mad Men. Like, this is, right? You are not Don Draper, and I am not a secretary from, like, the late 50s. It was,
Girl
I don't know.
Friday.
Kind of, like, stunned, like, that he thought that that was allowed.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate that I think a lot of people listening to this, and ourselves included, have similar stories. And it sucks when it's like affirming to see that other people have a problem with someone like doing that. Cause you, at least when that kind of thing has happened to me, I'm like, I doubt myself. I'm like, I can't say anything cause it's a powerful person. I'm actually freelance now because I didn't want that happening to me anymore. There's other reasons, but that was a big one that was kind of, I had left a kind of recent job because of that in the last 2 years.
It's wild. I keep thinking, like, I don't know, I was lucky that as a teenager, I wasn't in dangerous situations, like those, I don't know, certain terrible things that happened to a lot of teen girls did not happen to me. But it was because I was really shy and like solitary. So it's literally like, if you show up to spaces, that will likely happen to you. And if you don't, then it might not. But then you are losing out on a lot of experiences that are very positive because of the fear of certain things happening. And I mean, that's exactly what keeps women out of certain positions, because they don't want to deal with traumas, like repeated traumas, that a lot of like men in power inflict upon like women in lower positions.
100%. I really do think that's why there is like something really nice about freelance and freeing, that you get to do it on your own time and you set the rules, and absolutely things can happen. But especially in these work from home days where like work isn't like the center of the world, like it just can't be mostly. I think it's just like a little easier to just naturally get away from all that stuff.
It is. And it's like, it's a total bummer because I have been freelancing for like 2.5, like around 2 years now. And it's been great, but it's definitely been, I don't know. You just kind of realize like, oh, all of the, I don't know, like different industry, but like in acting, and like with certain celebrities, like there are some like female like character actresses who I am obsessed with, and like once they're past the age like 40, you don't really see them in much stuff. And it's usually because, like, I'm trying to remember, that actress's name. There was a whole thing that came out about her with Les Moonves. She's the art teacher in Ghost World. I remember her, like, anyway, there was this like whole thing where basically she was like sexually like assaulted by the powerful like CBS executive, and he kept her from having any other position in the industry because she was like under contract with CBS, and he kept saying like no to all of her like pitches and projects. And so it's either like you are forced out of an industry because you don't want to put up with that, or you are specifically kept away from roles because a certain someone doesn't want you to become powerful. And it's, yeah, it's ridiculous that that is the case within like any field, kind of like within any, I mean, creative especially, but like, yeah, any job. Like, they usually, the people in power are white dudes who want to keep things a certain way because that's how they benefit the most from it.
Absolutely. Also, I think Google search revealed, is it Ilena Douglas?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you. I was,
no problem.
I didn't want to like have a long silent pause while I, yes. And she, yeah, she's been in like a lot of stuff in the 90s, and then you can kind of like pinpoint the moment that she, yeah, that she was kept out of roles. And I mean, yeah, think of like all the other, like since the Me Too movement erupted, like all of the people that have come forward to be like, yep, we weren't allowed to do that because of this dude, and I didn't want to do this for him, so he like halted my entire career. Anyway, so it is, I don't know, it's just really sad that like freelancing, like to avoid that, you have to not work with in like an office space. Like, oh yeah.
It is, but I am glad we're, it seems like we can talk about it all a little more now. Like, I hope by having the conversations we all already have, comma, by doing things like this podcast,
yes.
I hope that, not that we're like responsible for anything, like not, we're like not to claim credit, but I just, I hope by having these conversations, we can make it a better world, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You gotta, it's easy to feel like hopeless and weird, like nihilistic. On the positive, when did you stop feeling gatekept in your career, if you have felt that way? And if you have felt that way, why did it happen? Or I guess, what was it a result of?
I don't totally know, because I, for the longest time, had a lot of like my own insecurities, like in every way, like creatively, physically, like socially. And I think I like put a lot of blame on myself for anything. Like if I wasn't, I don't know, if I didn't feel like I fit in somewhere, then I thought it was my fault. And I think that's like something that I am still trying to like unravel. Like, I don't know all of the times that I felt excluded from something, whether it was because of a controlled, like decision where I was made to not feel like allowed to participate. So I think, I don't know, will you guys be my therapist right now and tell me like, is it my fault?
No, it's not. It's never. And no, I feel like all we do is like text each other. Like,
yeah,
I felt bad about this. Or like, these people were weird to me and I feel like it's my fault.
Yeah.
It was, what did I do? It's like,
yeah,
I got a weird DM. Like, are they critiquing me? Like, because there's validity. Anyways, sorry, back to this.
It is. It is. Because it definitely makes you doubt, your own abilities. Like, is it a me thing? Is it a, like, did I do, I don't know. I mean, and that's so, it's so funny because when I have read, other people's experiences with like certain traumatic events, and they always have that thought of like basically victim blaming, like, did I like give off the wrong vibes? Did I say something wrong? Did I make a comment to make them feel like that was like giving them permission to behave that way? But when it happens, I don't know, like I can always think like, oh, never, like that person's a jerk because this girl's awesome. And like, she's never, like she would never, I don't know, behave in a way that would make it feel like that's okay. But when it comes to my own experiences, I automatically am like, it's all me. It's all my fault. It's all like, I did something wrong. Bad, bad Siobhan. And I need to like, obviously stop that mentality. But it is hard to kind of like separate. I don't know, because when you experience everything only from your own point of view. And so how do you change, how do you alter that perspective, that point of view, when it's like the only one you've ever known? Yeah. And especially, I don't know, cause I was, like I said, like I worked in publishing for 6 years, which is a very female oriented industry. Like, I don't know what the percentages are, but I feel like it was like 80% women that I worked with and like 20% men. And so I don't know, I kind of told myself like, that can't happen here. Like, because we like girl power, like that's what we tell ourselves. But of course there are, yeah, it's just like, who is allowed to have a position of power and who is allowed to voice an opinion against whoever's in power, because you don't want to be the one to get in trouble for it. And you don't want to be the one who becomes the outsider, basically. And it's, yeah, like, so of course, everyone that was on my kind of entry level position, like we would all hang out and like get lunch and get coffees and stuff. And then the people in like middle management positions, like they all hung out together. And then the people in the top positions, they all hung out together. So how do you even communicate across those sort of tiers of like positions, basically? And I don't think I ever really did. And now I'm no longer like working in an office. So, yeah, so it's kind of, I don't know, like, then I kind of think, should I have said more or done more, or should I like, what, how should I have acted differently to, I don't know, make sure that didn't happen again? Cause like in that, the specific instance that I mentioned, like I went to HR, but then he still remained employed for a few more years. So I think it was just like, they waited until more people spoke up, basically.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the feeling like your fault, if everything is your fault, like my vibes were off and they hate me, or like they didn't like this draft because I suck. I feel like a lot of it, I mean, a lot of it is because we're creative people, but a lot of it is gendered too, because I feel like a lot of the dudes I talk to don't feel that way. I know it's like, it's not like it's never a concern. Like everyone feels insecure about something sometimes, but I think feeling like things are always your fault all the time is like a non-cis man thing, just because of the systems that exist, especially exacerbated in offices. Those hierarchies are like so fucked up.
Yeah, because like just thinking of I don't know, like the roles that you were like kind of allowed to have like in school, in like grade school, like you, I don't know, you think like, or at least I would think like, I want teacher, don't let teacher be mad at you. So like raise your hand. Whereas there would be the boys to be like, blah, blah, blah. Like, or like yelling a loud joke, or like yelling the answer, or like a lot of, I don't know. Do you remember when like you would maybe like say the answer and then someone would, but you wouldn't say it loud enough. And then like a guy would hear it and say it louder and then he'd get credit, or like the same, like that same thing. Like 20 years later, where like you're at a party and like you make a joke, but it's not loud enough. And then the guy repeats the joke and he gets credit, like he gets the laugh. And it's like, fuck, like it's funny. Cause as, I don't know, the personas that we kind of like put off or like put out online, I feel like you try, like, you can create your own persona. And so the, like, persona or the kind of, like, vibe that I try to give off is, like, a little bit more obnoxious and, like, loud and sassy than I might be in real life, because that's who I want to be. Like, that is who I wish I had been, like, 20 years ago. But your, like, sort of inner self doesn't always reflect that outer self. So my inner self is still like, oh, like, no one heard my joke, so it was stupid, like, stupid, stupid, bad joke. Whereas if, I don't know, yeah, if you get, like, positive reinforcement for it, then you feel more like, ooh, la la, like, I'm on fire or whatever. And it's, yeah, and it's super based on just, like, years of, like, what role you had and, like, what, how you were, like, validated in that role. Like, I was validated with, like, good grades and, like, report cards that said, like, Siobhan is so polite. And so that made me feel like, okay, that's how I should be then, because I'm getting, like, at, like, I don't know, reinforcement for that. Whereas, I don't know, I think that that's just because that's how girls were always taught to behave.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, the pleasure to have in class every report card every year. And it's like, yeah, it makes you feel like, oh, like, I'm doing something right then, like, because I'm being quiet and, you know, like, good, not saying anything. And then, you know, all the men are just, like, screaming and they face, like, no repercussions. They get, like, a slap on the wrist for
being, I know, like, yeah, boys will be boys, yeah. And girls need to just deal with that. Like, then it's, you are kind of applauded for how you react to bad boys' behavior, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And all then if you do react, yeah.
I was about to say something so dumb. I'm going to mute myself. I was going to say, I was going to slightly transition, and I was going to be like, we're the nuns at your Catholic school, girl bosses, would you say?
Yes, Catholic, I went to Catholic girl school, boss. Yeah, and they were very much like, I would say no, because they were very sexist, and they were like, a woman's place is to be married to a man, and you have to do this, and perform this role, and be this, and that was like a whole other level of awful.
I'm really curious how, because I mean, like, I don't know, the people that we were, like, raised by and taught by are definitely from, like, a different generation. And I'm really curious how that, it, like, whether or not that will perpetuate. And I guess, okay, I can seamlessly talk about The Real Housewives into, like, bring it into any conversation. And so, here I am, I'm obsessed with The Real Housewives. And so I kind of think to myself, like, oh, like, people are, like, getting smarter and more aware and more conscious of these things. But then I will watch The Real Housewives and they'll be like yelling to their kids, like Dorothy, you run away from the boys. You run and the boys chase you. That's how it is. And like, these women are like a little bit older than me. And I'm still like, oh, like, it's not an older time and generation. Like, it's, I don't know. I would like to think that they're not going to be teaching children in class anymore. Like, boys will be boys, but who knows what current people are like.
Yeah, I hope it gets better. I recently, like, this week I had like a whole thing with my high school. They came out with like an awful new policy and everybody's like pissed, and like, I was like, they're not teaching kids anything new, like, the world is like bad, like, teachers aren't getting any better at like supporting like students, like, what's like, is there ever going to be change, like, especially as like I like to teach too. Like, I haven't taught art in a long time because of COVID, but like yeah, as a teacher, I'm like, it terrified me for like the future of teaching and the future of education. But
oh,
I'm reminded that there are a lot of people out there who do care. And I think it is
going to be really frustrating how, like, I would like to think that things are getting better, but it's just not getting better quick enough.
Yeah,
like, not as as swiftly as I would like to see it.
Yeah, also,
absolutely,
it doesn't hurt that, like, the people who are in power that want to stay in power, the powers that be, totally want you to be a nihilist, like, we'll never change it, you know? Like, that is such a prevalent narrative for everything.
Yeah,
I'm freaking everything out about it a little.
I know, me too. Like, yeah, the systems that are perpetuated are, like, hard in place because they want things to remain, like, the status quo as it's always been. And it is infuriating and makes you feel helpless, but that's what they want. So we have to somehow stop that.
We can. People totally have so much agency.
Yeah. And I think it's like, realizing how much agency you have. You don't realize until all it takes is, like,
they don't want you to.
Little thing. Yeah. No, they don't want you to say anything, but it's like, it doesn't take a lot.
Yeah.
Just tiny steps. Never moves as fast as you want it to, but.
Yeah. And I wonder, kind of bringing it back into, like, working with others in an office versus freelance, like, I don't know, hopefully maybe we can make things change as freelancers, like, outside of the kind of system in place, we can, I don't know, affect change that way.
Yeah, Olive and I talk about this a lot, how, like, it seems that the world, especially in American workplaces, is shifting towards mostly contract labor and less full-time employment. And that, like, our current systems, such as the tax code, do not reflect that at all. So I just wonder if, like, that shift in the first place will kind of change things, or, like, make it much easier as a freelancer to, like, change things.
Yeah, hopefully. And, hopefully not continue in a, like, sort of gig economy kind of way, where then you need to hustle through, like, three juggling positions to make enough money to have, like, the equivalent of, like, one office job.
Cool. So I think we have one more of this gaslight gatekeep girl boss section.
The final boss. Girl bosses. So in the A segment, we talked about, like, kind of two different types of girl bosses. One in which it's, like, used by men as, like, a way to take down women. And then the other one where it's, like bad people, like, using, like, wielding their femininity and, like, their womanhood to, like, be a bad boss, essentially.
And be, like, exempt.
Yeah, and be, like, exempt. Yeah. Like, oh, like, I'm a woman. It means I can't be a bad boss. Obviously, not true. But, So, what's the question? I'm looking at Google Docs.
You kind of answered the question.
Yeah.
Siobhan, which was, do you agree? The first question. Do you kind of agree with that definition?
Of
which, like, girl boss?
Yeah, okay. Well, girl boss is funny. It's a funny term because, like it originated kind of from Nasty Gal, right? Like, the Nasty Gal founder or whatever. Like, she had the book, I think, called, like, hashtag girl boss, which definitely became, like, like, infantilizing way to describe a woman in power. And it kind of then became a definition for, like, women who, like, kind of toxic, who kind of perpetuated toxic, like, professionalism, I guess, and, like, how, like, maintaining their position of power by kind of doing the same thing that they critiqued certain male people in power of doing. But I think it's also, like, I don't know, the fact it is a way of demeaning women to call them a girl boss, because if you describe someone with the word girl, the term, like, femininity and girlhood has always had the negative connotation of being, like, weak or being, like, subservient. Is that the word? So, like, to be kind of, like, not powerful, basically. And it sucks because, like, if it had a whole other existence, like the word girl boss, like I would like it, like, cause I would like to, have, like, I would like to have like pink, not automatically mean everything that like negative femininity kind of denotes. And like, by that, I mean, like, I know this is not a visual medium, but like, this is my side of the office. Like I share a studio with my partner and he is all like, Halloween and punk and wrestler and very, we're like a very accidental binary couple. Cause like, he loves kind of like, when you think of like early 90s, like Nickelodeon commercials, and it's like boy toys are like, ooh, like the goop, like look for the snotty, like bugs and monsters in this haunted castle. And then the girl commercials are like, pretty pony, brush your princess's hair, like look at the pink castle. And I like both those aesthetics, but like, I don't know, a lot of my work, has to do with like nostalgia. And of course my own like personal nostalgia involves sort of a hyper feminine, like aesthetics from like the 90s. And so I naturally like go towards that type of, aesthetic, but there was a time, and I don't know if that time is still now, where like that was kind of the easy, like punchline and the easy thing to make fun of and the easy thing to like kind of, I don't know, like to be repulsed by and to just kind of mean like girly equals stupid and like girly equals not powerful. So it sucks because girl boss kind of as a term tried to like defy that and be like, woo, like women like are strong. Like it was kind of, girl boss was kind of the like 2010s version of like the Spice Girls, like girl power and like girls rock and like you go girl, like all of those like early 2000s kind of catchphrases. But then of course it became a toxic term and it now kind of has a whole other layer of negativity, as like it should have, because the people that were calling themselves girl bosses like were, I think, shitty. Like kind of became known of like, oh, they are doing the exact same thing that we all acknowledge to be terrible from like powerful white men. And by that I mean like, I don't like not giving people the right wages or time or space or money, everything. So girl boss sucks. But I wish there could be I don't know, like a time for that kind of like feminine culture to be embraced by like everyone and to not have it be so binary and not have it be so I don't know, specific to only like one type of like white woman. And so, yeah, I think I would like to see that. And I think we are kind of seeing that little by little, being embraced by like amazing artists and non-binary figures. And yeah, I got really riled up and now I'm going to have just a soft landing.
No problem. Okay. Yeah. I have two things to say before we, and then maybe I'll have something. First of all, your two sides of the office. Do you know that photo that's the two houses and one's black and one's pink?
Yes. That's it. Cool. Is absolutely. That's, yeah.
The only thing
the
I could think of.
Next to the Hot Topic.
Yeah. It's so good. And then secondly, I just thought we'd be remiss, just wanted to mention and not like dive into it and maybe speak for other people whose experiences I don't like fully understand, but like all of this stuff, like we're talking a lot about gender, but it's like times like 5,000 complicated and made worse by like racial, not like made worse, but like the adversity you face like will often be made worse by your racial identity. So I don't want to just like gloss over that. Like we do acknowledge that, but yeah, I don't want to speak.
I know exactly. Yeah. I try to, yeah, read as much as possible about others' experiences, but I can't obviously speak on those experiences. I can only speak on my own, but it is, yeah, like absolutely. Like no matter what kind of frustration I'm feeling, it would be exacerbated so much more if I was a person of color or if I was a non-binary or queer person, because you have those like societal expectations like added on top of what I'm talking about, like when you are any kind of minority. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I think we'll pivot a little here. I just wanted to quickly say that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So we wanted to ask a little about your road to being a freelancer, because, you know, you started in-house in publishing. Was it scary for you to go freelance at the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I graduated from art school in 2012, and for my first year, right after art school, I had a summer internship at a big publisher in New York, which was super exciting, but I'm Canadian, so I was only allowed to be in New York for like the certain amount of time, like for the summer, or else my visa would, because my visa expired. So then after that, I worked as a freelancer, like quote unquote worked. I struggled for a year trying to get like jobs. After like for the first year after school, and then I did get a job in New York, and so that led me to like working in an office and publishing. But because of that like first year of like a struggle as a freelancer, I was always really afraid to think of pursuing that again because it was so difficult. And so I worked at two different publishers in New York, and I was then and like the type of visa that I was on, basically it was good for like 3 years, and then after 3 years I'd have to renew it either with like my current employer or like find a new job and have a new job sponsor me for 3 years. And I just wasn't feeling fulfilled in like the design position that I had, and it was kind of at like a crossroads of like, at that point, I'd already written and like published a book with Penguin, and I was working on another, and I wanted to focus on my own stuff because I was like, it sucks to have the feeling of like having to work on other people's art when you really just want to do your own thing. And so that was kind of like what made the decision. Like I just kind of considered, do I want to invest all this money in getting like applying for a new visa with this one job that I don't feel as passionate about as I do with my own work? And so I was able to get a whole other type of visa, and it's the O-1 visa. It's the like extraordinary talent or whatever. So like it's more commonly known as the artist visa. And being able to have that, it was like hard and scary, but it was definitely validating to finally feel like I could kind of like support myself basically. And it was, and still is, like hard and scary because you don't have, like, unless you have like a reliable set of like clients or like one long-term project that will really like help you out throughout the year. It is kind of like month by month, like, oh, like I need to pitch this. I need to work on this. I need to like pivot a style to try to be more, I don't know, commercial or more like, I don't know, just better. I don't know, like to kind of like find a new sort of avenue of creativity to like make money from, which is a sad way to look at it. But luckily it is just way more fulfilling to kind of have my own interests and own projects that I can like fuel myself with. And like sometimes the project that I start for fun that I just really, I don't know if I wanted, like a few years ago, I wanted to sort of practice my like figure drawing skills basically. So whereas a lot of my work had been kind of like simplistic and like just like sort of simple line art, I then kind of like pivoted into like, what if it was like super lush and detailed and large scale and more like environmental and like scenic, as opposed to like just one sort of figure. And then that kind of, I don't know, that could, that led to like a few new projects and new like freelance assignments and stuff, because a lot of times people don't, like clients and I don't know, people that hire me, they don't know what you can do unless they see you did it. And that's kind of what I'm still playing with. Like, I don't know, I want to be the best artist that I can be, and I don't want to get like pigeonholed, which is, I don't even know if that's like good advice to people, because I see that some artists, like they do one thing and then they become known for that one thing. And then that's, it's like they're like shtick basically. Like that's, they are known as the, like, I don't know, XYZ artist. And if someone has a project about XYZ, they know to contact them, which can work for some people and like has worked for me, but it is, I don't know, it can make me feel stagnant and just kind of like stuck. And I don't know if that means I am kind of all over the place with my art, as opposed to like consistent and I don't know, loyal to like one type of brand or whatever. But I mean, yeah, I've been freelancing for 2 years and it's been great. And especially because like the first year that I tried freelancing, like a decade ago, I didn't have a style. I didn't have like an idea of what kind of artist I wanted to be. I saw myself as a designer and not an illustrator. Whereas now I see myself as an illustrator and a designer, but like kind of foremost an illustrator. So it's going full-time freelance was definitely the right choice for me. But it is still scary. Like, I don't know when it stops being scary.
I freelance a little bit like right out of college and had like, you know, weird jobs. I'm working full-time for like a real estate agency now, but trying to freelance, like it's so crazy. Let's see. Do you think it was like easier to get into freelancing after like having been in like working in-house in publishing?
I don't think I could. I mean, I know I wouldn't have like the career that I have as a freelancer if I hadn't like worked in publishing and B, worked in New York, like just being around everybody who is in the creative industry. And it was definitely helpful to kind of like almost have an inside perspective, because I was the person, like I was hiring artists for book covers and I was art directing artists. So to kind of have that experience, like of in-house versus outhouse versus like, yeah, like being an outsider trying to get hired in, it was definitely helpful. But it was also like, I don't know, I still had that like everybody hates me like type of like mindset of like imposter syndrome. Like I'm working in-house, but I feel stupid still, you know. And I think I feel definitely more sure of my own abilities. Like I don't, I don't know. Like I don't need to know the ins and outs of what the current trends are in like art direction and in like publishing, because I don't want to change. Like I don't want to change, my own stuff for the benefit of like a trend. So it's definitely been like, I don't know, very freeing to not have to dictate my own stuff based on the whims of like what sells right now.
Okay, I'm going off script. Sorry, Olive.
First, go ahead.
Just because you mentioned trends and like book design. Okay, this is so off script. So I'm going to try to work through it right now. When you go to Barnes & Noble and see like the contemporary, like, I don't know, fiction that's coming out next month, a lot of the covers look very, 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 very similar. Is that just because there's like so few people in the publishing industry that are like making the decision? Like, is it just because a few people are doing it? Like,
I don't know if it's that like there's so few people. I think it's that when there's one big success of like a book and that cover is very like specific, then automatically like the market knows and like marketing people know like if they want to sell a book in that genre, it should look like this because they want the buyer to associate it with that type of book. And it makes sense. It's kind of like, when there's a huge, like a blockbuster movie comes out, I don't know, like think of like Jaws came out in 1975. And then I'm pretty sure there were a bunch of like a million like B movies that were like sharks and like teeth and like movies that had similar movie posters and had similar like, ooh, like under like the water scaring out. Like, it's just like, I don't know. It's just piggybacking. I mean, and there are definitely like amazing book designers who are able to take some type of like trend and like make it their own or make it like just as appealing as like the first book looked. But it is, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of like, it's not, I don't know. It's not fun working in-house and being told like buyers at Barnes & Noble are noticing that people aren't buying books that have like script font on the cover. So avoid script. It's just, it's based on like who's buying stuff. And it's, yeah. And I guess that's kind of the definition of a trend. Like, it's a specific aesthetic for a certain time because people are buying it because it was super popular the summer before. But it is, yeah, it's just, I don't know. That to me is a little bit of a bummer because you don't know if, like a whole new design aesthetic, like book cover can then become the one that is the trendsetter for the future, as opposed to like continuing to follow last year's trend.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I've just had that question for a while, so
yeah,
I'm gonna return back to script, to kind of the opposite of trends, which is kind of where we were going in the first place before I took a hard right. Now I took a hard left, and we're back 180. Okay, so you have a Patreon, which is very much your work, and I would say it's successful. You have a lot of followers, I think.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because that was, like, soon after I became a full-time freelancer, you have to hustle, and you have to, like, hustle in a way that feels right to you. And so a lot of illustrators I know, like, when they go freelance, they're able to just do lots of, like, really cool, like, just spot art for different, like, editorial magazines or, like, for newspapers and just do pitches for, like, I don't know, news articles. And that is not really my sweet spot. I guess I'm just kind of like a brat and I want to do what I want to do. And if you want to like see it, then you can pay me.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. I'm really like having fun with Patreon because it kind of just reminds me of like, when I was in high school, like I had a live journal and it was kind of like, it felt secret to me. I had like a pseudonym, like it wasn't like Siobhan Gallagher, and it wasn't even like, you know, Bunches of Flowers, XOX, whatever. It was like someone else's, it was a name that I made up. And it just felt like kind of fun and secretive. And that's kind of what Patreon is reminding me of. I'm able to share the work that I want to share and work on without relying on Instagram likes, basically, and like the algorithm and the whims of like what people expect to see on Instagram, basically. And it's, yeah, I don't know. It's been really fun. It is, my Patreon is CO Gallagher. And it's, I have like three different, or I guess four different tiers where, if you want just like five, new comics a month, it's $2 a month. And then there's another one where like, I'm having a lot of fun, since like quarantine, since COVID, of but like my new obsession is just buying like rubber stamps and stickers and envelopes and cool stationery and letterhead and just like indulging in being everyone's pen pal. So another tier is like where I send like fun little mail and drawings and like cool little old paper ephemera. And then the top tier is where like I send original art every month to people in that tier. And it's, I don't know, it's very fulfilling because it's like I get to do the work that I would be doing either ways, but being able to share it in a way that is helpful to me financially and not too like stressful. Like I'm giving myself my own deadlines and I'm trying to like overcompensate. Like I don't want it to seem like I'm just kind of like giving up and like just kind of like letting myself go creatively. And it's, yeah, that has, it's like, I think right now been 2 years of having a Patreon, and it's been like a fun, I don't know, way of just like pushing myself like to continue to draw as much as I want and as much as I can, yeah, without having to rely on like anybody else, basically.
Do you want to speak a little to how you kind of built up a bunch of followers on Patreon, and maybe if you have advice for someone looking to start?
Yeah, sure. Because it's definitely been, like when I started my Patreon, I wasn't following any Patreon, so I didn't really know what other people were doing or what was expected. And I started like, I had low expectations. I was just kind of like, okay, if I like an extra like $100 a month would help me. And I'm already doing a lot of drawing, so why not like use that to continue a Patreon? So it was like a slow start. I don't remember like how many people I had following me like this point last year, but I really just like I was continuing to post what I always post on Instagram, and then I would like occasionally in the last like slide of like an Instagram carousel or whatever, where I have like one panel on slide one, second panel on slide two, the last panel would just be like, follow me on Patreon, like this is what I've got going on. And I really tried to put as much up on Patreon as possible to make sure that people knew that it was going to be consistent, and that like if you did join me on Patreon, you could rely on. For the longest time, I did two comics a week, and then that just became kind of like draining. So I brought it to one a week, and then like once or twice a month, there would be two a week. So there's usually like five or six comics like per month. And it kind of allowed me to separate, like I now use Instagram as what kind of like jobs would I like to receive from what I post. And Patreon has been more kind of like personal, like me working through stuff personally and sharing it online. It lets me kind of like get into more nitty gritty stuff that I don't want just anyone having access to. Cause I'm working on a book about like body issues and like an eating disorder and just like super personal stuff that obviously like it's going to be published and it's going to be public. But as I'm working through it, it's kind of like a safe space for me to share things that that I just wouldn't want anyone to have access to. And I kind of like, I value my work, and I don't think that artists should be expected to share everything for free, especially when it's comics, which I don't know, I think a lot of people kind of think is like an easy thing and an easy, like it is a fun job. It's a fun, like career path, but it is also work. And, yeah, I don't know. I've kind of made it feel like I have a newspaper, and every week there has to be a comic in my little newspaper. And that's what I like. It's not going in an actual newspaper, but it is going to be a consistent thing that you can like receive in your email once or twice a week. And some advice for, I guess, people who want to start their own Patreons. Like I look at people who have like thousands of subscribers and like make thousands of dollars a month, which I don't. Like I kept my accounts public because you can either share what you make a month and how many people follow you, or you can keep it private. And I think right now I have like 74 subscribers and I make like $440 a month. And so I think just kind of being like, that is maybe helpful to people to see like, oh, I can see how many other people are following and judge it based on like, I guess 75 people will think it's good enough. So maybe I can too. And just keeping it as like consistent and as often as possible. And like at the very start, maybe putting like your all into it, even though it might feel like you're doing a lot, that then becomes like a backlog of like cool stuff that new subscribers can have immediate access to once they join. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know I don't even know if there was like a kind of equivalent to Patreon before Patreon, but it's definitely just, I don't know. It's like you get money from the stuff that you're already doing automatically. And it's been really fun. Yeah. I don't know. It's been like, if you make it fun for yourself, then it's worth it because it's not a job. It's like, yay. Like I get to share my work and get a little bit of coin from it.
That's like, I don't have much experience with Patreon, but like hearing it as like in that context, it's definitely seems like it's like personal commissions, but like every month. And it's just like cool people that want to like keep like, you know, commissioning you for stuff. And it's like,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's like so cool. I don't know. I'm fully, like, I don't want to use the word regressing, but I'm fully just like indulging in all of my favorite things from when I was like 12, like what, I don't know, what makes me feel good. I love receiving mail. I love sending mail. It's just like these, I don't know, certain things come naturally. And like, how do I express love? Like, I draw things for people and it's nice to be able to do that without being forced to do, I don't know, a specific thing. Like I get to choose, like for my top like tier subscribers, like I get to choose my, like assign myself a little theme every month of like what I want to draw. It's like 2 months ago, I was really into drawing like screen stills from like movies, from my favorite movies. And so I just like did that for fun. And then I had 10 of them and I was like, oh, I'll just give them like, these aren't, I don't know. These were fun and kind of like a nice way, a nice little like assignment to like dust off those abilities. And then instead of like holding on to them for years, hoping that like at the next like comic fair, like someone will buy it, I'll just like, I will get like send them off and post about it. And then now I'm offering like those as commissions. So if anyone who has seen them wants one, like you can have access to that.
That's so sick. And especially outside of the like worrying about the Instagram algorithms too, because that's, I'm always like, when I post, like, is this going to get me work? Blah, blah, blah. But it's like,
I know.
That's really nice to have like a, like work be not separated to Instagram in that way. Cause it really has become like a place where it's like your second portfolio. A lot of times I feel.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's very like, I don't know. It's funny. Cause you can spend like 40 hours working on something and post it and then feel bad about yourself when it doesn't get as much likes as something that you did that was like just kind of dumb and for fun and like silly. And yeah, I want to not rely on Instagram as much as I have in the past.
Sick. I think we have one more question for you. It's a fun one though. What is your favorite, like your favorite things to draw right now? And also, jumping off the girl boss stuff. I know you did that whole series of like, all like the woman in like media and movies and stuff. Do you have like a favorite woman to draw like from that?
Oh my gosh. Okay. What am I into drawing right now? Everything that I'm drawing right now, I'm drawing because I'm procrastinating from working on my book. So, last night I started drawing, Snooki as like a pickle princess because she had that Halloween costume from like 11 years ago where she dressed up as like a little pickle queen because she wanted free pickles, from some event. And I was like, that. So I guess my favorite thing to draw right now is like unapologetic women who kind of, like who kind of defy the expectation of being a woman. And that's, I think that's kind of like across the board, my favorite thing to draw. Like I had, like I did have a series of drawings where it's like sort of my favorite, characters from movies. And it was like Parker Posey's character from Dazed and Confused, Mrs. Robinson from The Graduate, just like certain, like cool women who are cool for a very specific reason. And then I had another series that I'm like, I want to pick up again, called Gross Girls, where it's just like sort of lavish, decadent looking ladies, who are doing like really gross, normal things like peeing in a pool or like peeing in the shower. I guess a lot of peeing, a lot of urinating women. That's my, right up my alley right now. I guess just like drawing women, like feminine women who kind of defy the typical definition of femininity. That's my that's my sweet spot.
Love that. I love the Gross Girls series.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's it for our questions.
I think so.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Thanks again, Siobhan.
Thanks so much.
I'm sorry. I feel like I totally like diverted off of the theme and started just rambling about wives.
No
and
worries. Everything was great.
We have no problem.
All right.
No problems.
Yeah. Here, I'll stop the recording. Sorry, it's going to be.
Cold Email is a very professional podcast about being early career creatives and all the trials, tribulations, and good times that come with it. Recorded, written, and performed by Basha Kurlander and Olive Lagaze. Edited by Basha Kurlander. Follow us on Instagram at cold.email and check out our website, cold-email.tumblr.com. Email us at coldemail1000@gmail.com with any questions you want us to answer on the show, suggestions for future themes, or to inquire about guest starring in an episode. Music by Basha Kurlander aka Marbly. As always, thanks for listening.
Okay, we've gotten so far. I'm going to gatekeep us from that topic. Just kidding. I'm going to I'm just redirecting us back on track. Happy anniversary of me getting thrown up on from a third story window 3 years ago today.
Yes. Yes, in Manhattan. Midtown.
In Midtown, you were right next to me. I tell you.
That is fucking sick.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you did. Would you like
to tell
a story?
Shout out to Austin, who saw me in the street and was like,
Hey,
you're from the podcast.
Connecticut heads, I wasn't there, but I heard you.
I think Pat's from Long Island. Pat's like definitely
so
a Long
funny.
Island emo.
I love that.
Where
for
did
him.
You see him?
Literally, we were walking down whatever the fuck this is, and we turned right and he turned left.
He must live a block away.
Yeah, I was like,
walking with, it was literally like 10 in the morning, like we just left the house, and I was so like, funny. Grace, like, that's the realtor that showed us this place. And she's like, wow, no kidding, that's weird. It's like,
commutes to Long Island.
To Long Island?
Well, he's like, that's a Long Island realty company. Very odd. Okay, back to that was our realtor, by the way. I'm sure this is making it into the
A good blooper. A real good blooper.
Pat. Hey. Okay.
You're Basha and I'm Olive, and this is Pratt Radio. let me turn off. Oh, I had it recording still. You want me to keep that one?